You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast at savage.love.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
It's a free country. That's what the man said. That's what the white man said. The white man at the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport said that last week when he was getting arrested for threatening the life of a TSA agent at a security checkpoint. I don't know if this guy had a ticket and was supposed to fly that day, or he just rolled into the airport looking for trouble, but he was unruly. He wasn't following the rules because freedom, which is just another word for rules are optional for white men. This guy was told to move away from the checkpoint by a TSA agent, but as he said, it's a free country. And in a free country, men can do what they want. And what this guy wanted to do at that moment was pick up a metal stanchion and swing it at the TSA agent's head. It didn't land. He missed, and he was arrested again. I don't know if this guy had a ticket to fly somewhere that day, but if he did, I'm really glad he showed us who he was before getting on an airplane. Because I don't want to read another story or see another video of a flight attendant being punched in the face by some asshole passenger ranting about masks. A quick digression, a suggestion for airlines. I don't know why you, the airlines, aren't pressing the feds to require people to be vaccinated in order to fly. No shots, no flights. Because the Venn diagram of people who won't get vaccinated and people who assault flight attendants, well, it's not a perfect circle. There are a lot more people out there who haven't been vaccinated than there are people out there who've assaulted flight attendants. But everyone who's assaulted a flight attendant over the last year has been a raving anti-vax, anti-mask idiot. We've all seen the videos. So this Venn diagram is a little circle, the people who've assaulted flight attendants, inside a much bigger circle, people who won't get vaccinated. So ban people who won't get vaccinated from flying, and the problem of unruly passengers assaulting flight attendants gets solved. Anyway, I saw the headline about the white guy screaming freedom at the airport. It's a free country in Minneapolis while he was assaulting a TSA agent. And I clicked through and read the whole story because I find airport stories morbidly fascinating because I fly a lot. And after reading the story, man, all I gotta say is, besides ban unvaccinated people from flying, please, is that wherever he is right now, Larry Craig must be pissed. Many of you probably don't know who Larry Craig is, or maybe you don't remember. He was a senator from Idaho, an anti-gay senator, a religious conservative, family values preening asshole. I mean, he won a statewide election in Idaho. What else would he be? Craig first got elected to the Senate in 1991, and he'd probably still be in the Senate if he didn't get arrested at the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport in 2007 in a men's toilet. He was sitting in a stall, tapping his foot, and this was apparently some gimme dick code, some secret gimme some dick code that I, as an out gay man who flew in and out of the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport for years, I mean, it's a Delta hub, somehow I didn't know about this secret gimme some dick code. I didn't know you could go into a toilet at the airport and tap your foot and get dick. But the senior senator from Idaho knew about it, and he got arrested and outed for it. He tried to explain away the toe tapping and the sliding his foot into the neighboring stall where a cop was sitting by claiming he had a wide stance. No one bought it at the time, no one buys it now, and Craig had to leave the Senate. But he's still out there somewhere, still alive, and also still out there insisting to anyone who'll listen that he has no interest in dick. He just needs to spread him wide when he takes a shit. I haven't thought about Craig for years, but I thought about Larry Craig while I was reading the news about this guy, the guy who swung the metal stanchion at a TSA agent last week, because of this paragraph in the story on CBS Minnesota WCCO Channel 4's website. Surveillance video showed the man punching and headbutting TV screens at the airport, taking his clothes off, and masturbating. This all happened about an hour before the incident at the checkpoint. Okay, So if you're Larry Craig and you're reading this story, here's this guy who's running through the terminal, vandalizing TV screens and stripping naked and jacking off, running around the terminal with his dick in his hand, and nothing happens. He doesn't get arrested until he tries to kill a TSA agent. And poor Larry Craig, he's sitting quietly in a toilet stall, tapping his toes, trying to get himself some dick relatively discreetly, and he gets arrested immediately and politically destroyed, which, make no mistake, I was glad about at the time and am glad about still. Like all closeted gay Republican conservatives, Craig tried to throw people off the scent of airport toilet cock on his breath by staking out the most rabidly anti-gay positions and having the most rabidly anti-gay voting record of any member of the Senate. So, you know, fuck Larry Craig. But still, poor Larry Craig. That had to smart reading that. Wherever he is, Craig is thinking, I got arrested for tapping my toes and this guy didn't get arrested for jacking it by the check-in desks and the Starbucks and baggage claim and the Cinnabon? I guess none of us, Larry Craig included, should be surprised. June of 2007, when Craig got arrested at the Minneapolis airport, is a long way from November of 2021. It felt then like terrible white dudes could get away with pretty much anything. But somehow, terrible white dudes are getting away with so much worse today. They're getting away with murder, figuratively, in the case of the guy who is running around the airport naked and having a wank without getting arrested. And quite literally getting away with murder, in the case of the guy who is running around Kenosha, Wisconsin, with an AR-15 and isn't going to prison for killing two people and wounding another. All right, let's just shake that off and talk about this week's show. Let's talk about the rest of the show. It's Thanksgiving on Thursday. We want to thank you. We want to thank you for listening. Thank you to our micro listeners. Thank you to our Magnum subscribers. Nancy and I and the tech-savvy at-risk youth, we love doing this show, and we couldn't do it if it weren't for all of you. All of you who listen and talk about the show on Twitter and call us with your questions and call us with your comments. We are so thankful for you. This week's show, as promised, all queer questions, tons of queer questions from tons of different kinds of queers. No questions from trans people. Sorry about that. Would have included a question from a trans person or persons, plural, if we'd gotten one for this week's show, but we didn't. But we will have questions from trans people in the future, as we have had them in the past. What I'm most excited about for this week's queer show, all queer show, are our very, very queer guests that I think you're going to be really excited about too. Joining us to take your sex questions with me, they are on the micro and the magnum, Alaska and Willem of Drag Race fame on this week's Savage Lovecast. We're awfully thankful for that too, and we think you're going to enjoy it. Coming up right now. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Manscaped, the leading men's hygiene brand. Manscaped just launched new products, including their all-new ultra-premium body wash and a 2-in-1 shampoo and conditioner. It's time to give yourself or someone who needs it the gift of beautiful skin, hair, and balls this holiday season. Go to manscaped.com and use the code LOVECAST for 20% off plus free shipping.
This episode of the Lovecast is brought to you by the good folks at Squarespace. They make it easy to build a beautiful website, blog, or online store. Head on over to squarespace.com/savage for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code SAVAGE to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by omgyes.com, a website devoted to women's pleasure. Check it out and get a discount when you go to omgyes.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. 30-something-year-old, lesbian-identified woman in my mid-30s. I just have a question. So I've been a bottom my entire lesbian experience, and I am wondering what the difference is between being a bottom and being heterosexual but homoromantic. What I mean by that is that, you know, I've always liked penetrative sex and it's never been with a man, but does it make me heterosexual if I like penetrative sex and sometimes I think about a guy's dick while I'm getting railed by a dildo? I don't know. I just think it's an interesting thought. Tell me your thoughts.
You know, decades ago, back in the bad old days, a century ago, guys who liked to fuck guys in the ass didn't think of themselves as gay. It was the person who was being penetrated who was the homosexual. The penetrator, there was nothing gay about that, nothing homosexual about that, nothing effeminate about that. That was masculine. So, you know, back in the bad old days, you had a lot of deeply conflicted, closeted, self-hating, straight-identified gay guys out there who thought that they were straight because they didn't kiss, they also didn't get fucked, they didn't suck dick, they got serviced. And so long as you were the top, even if you were having sex with other men, you were still a straight guy. I'm sure that you see, that you can see, even from your position as a bottom, on your back, on the bed, being railed by a dildo, strapped onto a lady, why that's bullshit. Of course that's bullshit. You know, just looking at who's being penetrated, or who's penetrated exclusively, if somebody is 100% a bottom, or penetrating exclusively, if someone's 100% a top, doesn't tell you whether that person is straight or gay. Penetration itself does not have or bestow a sexual orientation. That you sometimes fantasize while your girlfriend or wife, I don't know which you have, is railing you with a strap-on dildo, you sometimes fantasize about that strap-on dick being an actual biological human male's dick doesn't make you 100% straight. Maybe it makes you a tiny little bit bisexual, a tiny little bit, as a lesbian, bi-curious. But yeah, it doesn't make you straight. Think of all the gay bottoms out there in the world. They're not women just because they like to be fucked. Think of the gay tops, the exclusive gay tops. They're not straight men just because they like to get fucked. And think of the women you have sex with who are exclusively tops to your exclusive bottom, who are the lids to your pots. The fact that they're fucking you doesn't make them straight men? Yeah, this totally falls apart under scrutiny. And I think you're sidestepping the real issue with your sexual orientation and identity here, which is not that because you're a bottom and you like to get railed, you're straight, because every once in a while you fantasize about real dick as opposed to strap-on dick. And strap-on dicks are real too. They have mass. They exist in the universe. They're made up of atoms and matter. It's that you are, the real issue here is that you're just a little bit bi-curious, and that's fine. You can be a little bit bi-curious and still be lesbian identified. No one's going to tackle you and take your lesbian card away from you. I'm a gay man. I had sex with women a long time ago when I was trying to be straight. Doesn't make me any less gay. There are straight guys out there who are maybe situationally heteroflexible. I mentioned that in my column this week. Doesn't mean they can't identify as straight or aren't, you know, in the final accounting, mostly straight and allowed to round themselves up that final, or round themselves down that final 2 or 3% to straight. And you are allowed to round yourself up that final 2 or 3% to lesbian, even if every once in a while your girlfriend's fucking plowing you, you're curious about what that might feel like with a dude with a dick.
Hi there, queer man calling. I'm married. Well, been together about 15 years. We've been married about 7. Anyway, we recently had a huge fight. I'll spare the details, but it was ugly. And 5 days later, we're both sort of like shaken and anyway, so I'm a longtime listener, and I've heard you sometimes reference ways to find queer-friendly therapists, because I think we need somebody to help us out with this. And we're also non-monogamous, so I want to find somebody that's not going to be judgmental about our non-monogamy. And also, before I called, I did an internet search, and really so much came up that I was overwhelmed. So if you could give me the names of a couple of organizations or websites that would narrow that down for us, that would help me out a lot.
Okay, this is an easy one. Go to the website of the American Association of Sexuality Educators, Counselors, and Therapists. Click on Find a Professional, enter the state where you live, and then look through the websites of the various listed sex educators, counselors, and therapists that you find through ASEC. Most of them, all of them, are going to be queer friendly. Most of them, if not all of them, are going to be fine working with couples in open relationships and polyamorous couples. Email, contact the therapists in your area that you, I guess, vibe with their website, and lay out who you are and what you're looking for and the kind of therapist you're seeking. And you'll get emails back and go see one. If it feels good, if it feels right, if it feels like a match, continue to see that therapist. If it doesn't feel good, if you feel shamed or you feel like they're homophobic or they're, you know, not, you know, they're phobic about open relationships or non-monogamy as gay men often practice it, move on. Find a new therapist. You don't have to keep seeing a therapist that isn't working for you. But the place you need to go, the place for you to start, the website of the American Association of Sexuality Educators, Counselors, and Therapists, ASECT.org. That's ASECT.org. If you've never had the singular pleasure of trimming your own or your loved one's pubes, I recommend you give it a try with Manscaped. When they sent us what they call the Performance Package 4.0, Terry gave a little whoop of joy because, you see, at our place, we're really into trimming and sometimes shaving. Inside the Performance Package 4.0, you will find the signature Lawnmower 4.0. This electric trimmer has proprietary advanced skin-safe technology to reduce cuts on your nuts. It's also waterproof, so you can use it in the shower, thus reducing mess. It also includes the Crop Preserver and Crop Reviver, an anti-chafing ball deodorant, moisturizer, and toner. This hygiene bundle also comes with a pair of Manscaped anti-chafing boxers that'll keep your junk feeling fresh all day. The perfect package for your perfect package. And Manscaped is going beyond the groin with their new Ultra Premium Body Wash. It's infused with aloe vera and sea salt to keep your skin feeling clean, nice, and moisturized. Would the Manscaped Performance Package 4.0 make a good holiday gift for the ball havers in your life? You're goddamned right it would. Take it from me and the rest of the ball havers at my place. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code LOVECAST at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com when you use the code LOVECAST. Doms, make your sub, beg for it. Okay, now we have a couple of very special guests who are going to help me field some of your questions. Two of the most iconic queens to come out of RuPaul's Drag Race. They host the Race Chaser podcast and Hot Goss and run the Moguls of Media podcast network. Season 5 finalist and All Stars 2 winner Alaska and her co-host season 4 fan favorite Willem. Join me now to take some of your questions.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 25-year-old bisexual woman. I recently got into a relationship with one of my coworkers. We've been together for 4 months. It's really great. The sex is pretty good. But I'm calling because recently my partner, who is quite a bit older than me, he's in his late 30s, disclosed to me that he's had over 120 sex partners in his lifetime. How does one cope with that kind of information as his partner? I have also had a rich sex life, so I don't know that it's feeling left out, but upon hearing a number like that, you know, over 120 for a straight man, I couldn't help but just feel like deeply jealous and overwhelmed and like confused about how I'm feeling. So I'm just calling to ask you, like, how do I cope with that information? Is that a red flag? I'm guessing you're going to say no. My partner used to be a musician and he was in a band. So, of course, everyone wanted to have sex with him. But, yeah, I'm really struggling with this.
Okay, Willem, Alaska, what do we have to say about 120 sex partners besides amateur?
I was just going to say she must not have many gay friends if she thinks that's a lot.
Well, and she was aware of that. She was like, you know what? Everyone's going to read me for this. Everyone's going to say, oh, I'm like, I'm such a square because of this. But like, this is a thing. They did an episode of Friends about this. This is a thing. When you're one of the partners is inevitably going to have more partners than the other. And how do you feel about that?
I think you should feel good about it. I always thought, you know, when I was young and sexually inexperienced, that if I was with somebody who had a lot of experience and they liked the sex they were having with me, that meant I must be kind of good at it because they had a larger frame of reference and comparison. Sure, so take the fucking compliment.
I agree. I totally agree with that. Yeah, if you're enjoying it now, you know what? Like, go off. Like, live. That's fabulous. It's also like, this also happens in, have you seen Best in Show?
Not for a while.
And Catherine O'Hara plays this character who's with this guy. And everywhere they go, she runs into guys that she's slept with. It's really funny. Just, it's the same thing.
In the interest of full disclosure, should we give our numbers?
I tried to figure out my number because I'm writing my second book and there's like a whole few years of emails that are gone from my old like hookup account, but I know mine's in the four digits.
So, Alaska? Okay, over, well, I don't know.
Oh, that means over 1,000 under 999.
Okay.
But the night is young. Right. The weekend is coming.
Honey, I'm in Edinburgh. Hit me up.
I would have to send away to NASA to calculate, but I don't know. But now, like, you know, now that's behind me. So, like, and I'm
it's in front of me too sometimes.
I'm in a monogamous relationship now. And so, but I had like a very active, like, younger life. What about yours, Dan? What's your number?
You know, at the beginning of the pandemic, I started going through boxes of crap I've been lugging around my whole life. And I found a list I kept when I first became sexually active at 15. And it was all written in code in case my parents found it. And what's hilarious about that is, like, my parents found a list of men's names with some hieroglyphics next to them. They would have assumed it was in code because it was hiding something and they would have leapt to sex. So it was dumb. And I spent like a week trying to like figure out the code again because I didn't write down a cipher.
Right.
But that list from like 15, 16, 17 had 40 names on it.
Okay.
Okay. I've always been big on lists too. And mine was found by trade under the bed when I went into the bathroom once. And he's like, how do I get on that list? And I was like, well, and I still do lists. This is my smash list now.
She keeps records.
Oh my God, I'm seeing names. Hey. We're not going to show that video, but I just saw a flash of a long list of names. Well, not a long list, half a page.
It's like my 40 before 40, and it's like 48 people. Some are three ways, so.
You got to have goals.
I made Any a list a goal. Once years and years ago, and but the thing is, sometimes you don't really know their name or know their names or remember their names. So you're like, guy at this place who we did this thing with this thing.
Yeah. What hair you're wearing?
I was very Catholic, and I, you know, I at least had to know their names. I thought Aww. That made it all right with the nuns who had died and were watching over me. That. Taught yeah. me in grade school. If I at least knew their names, God wouldn't hate me so much. So
I love this. To this listener, I just say, just enjoy what you have right now because it's fierce.
Yeah, yeah, enjoy it. And I'm not exactly sure what this listener thinks this would be a red flag about. When we talk about red flags, we're usually talking about someone who's emotionally abusive, physically abusive.
Right.
That someone's honest. Got game and they were honest with you about their number of sex partners. And Jesus, when this usually comes up, it's a man who has a problem with a woman who's had too many sex right. partners because of slut shaming and men being so fucking straight men in particular being so fucking insecure. It's rare to get this like, oh my God, the number panic attack from a woman about a dude.
Right.
Especially in a band. Oh, hello.
Did we just literally. Say it at the same
yeah,
time?
Yeah, because we know that's a low number for anybody who tours.
He was in a band, honey.
Girl, goodbye.
So she
Drag
should
queens,
just
we share a brain.
Get over it, take the compliment, and work like hell to match his number eventually. Get on it.
Yeah.
Ramp it up. Well, me and Alaska and Willem, we're only getting started. You can hear us continue with our little love fest on the Magnum version of the show. You can subscribe to the Magnum Savage Lovecast at savage.love. If you just want to give the Magnum a try, you can subscribe for 1 month for $5. And so long as your subscription lasts, you can listen to every Magnum episode we've ever made. We started doing them in 2013, so there is a lot of content there. Check it all out at savage.love. The Magnum Savage Lovecast, twice as much Lovecast, more guests, more calls, and no ads.
This show is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're setting up a business or getting a creative or political project off the ground, you will find an indispensable partner in Squarespace. They make it easy to put together a good-looking website, blog, or online store. They have everything you need: domains, marketing tools, analytics, e-commerce. Buying a domain from Squarespace is simple because there are no hidden fees or price hikes. Squarespace sells over 200 top-level domains, so you can find the perfect name for your website. Choose a URL that ends in .com, .net, .org, or get even more specific with one like .art. Ooh. You can put together video ads, launch online courses, put out a virtual tip jar. All the tools you need to monetize your website and reach your goals are there waiting for you. You'll create powerful email content that matches your website with your existing products, blog posts, and your logo, so your messaging is consistent and effective. And what's more, everything you make with Squarespace translates perfectly to mobile. Head on over to squarespace.com/savage for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code SAVAGE to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/savage and use the offer code SAVAGE.
Hey, Dan. My name is Bill. I'm calling from the Northeast. I'm from Buffalo. And I just listening to this week's episode and the upcoming LGBTQ episode, felt it was finally time to ask your advice on how to live as a bisexual, heteroamorous guy these days. This question is twofold. Like, A, I grew up like pretty conservative, but have become very liberal. I grew up around guns. I was in the Marines. I still hunt. I'm around gym bros all the time. And I'm just bi when it comes to sex. Like, I don't know how to be an advocate for the community like I feel like I should be, because it just, in volunteering that info, it just gives people a window into my sex life. It's not like I'm ever going to be dating a guy. So I feel very conflicted there. Especially like when my background is, like I said, it's kind of conservative and kind of rural. Like when I see the certain things in the media, it just feels like the movement's eating, a snake eating its own tail when it comes to the fighting over some pronouns and stuff like that. So second fold of my question is asking advice on how to put myself out there in the dating world. Like, I'm a single dad. I have custody of my son. And like I said, knowing the area that I come from, like, it's not the type of community where you lead with it. Like, women are very much presumptive and they don't tend to or seem to understand that there's a difference, I guess, or that I could be faithful or that I can be ethically non-monogamous. Because there's an inherent amount of non-monogamy implied when you come out as bisexual. So I guess your advice on how to put myself out there and try and date honestly, and I guess how should I roll that out? Should I be upfront about it? Should I wait till I establish rapport with somebody?
There is a lot going on here. You raise a lot of questions, subjects, topics, issues with your call, with your life, really. I almost don't know where to begin. It's important for bisexual people who are in opposite sex relationships or bisexual people who are heteroamorous to be out about being bi. It's most important for individuals who are bisexual to be out about being bi. You hear a lot, you read a lot about bisexual people having mental health outcomes that are worse than the mental health outcomes for gays, lesbians, straight people. And I think that's often because, and there's some research and data to back this up, back my point up, that many bisexuals are closeted, and the stress of the closet, carrying that forward, you know, if you were to date some woman and fall in love and kick the can down the road and not tell her you're bisexual, and then the stakes got higher and higher and higher, you know, you became more and more emotionally invested in her, and eventually you just, like, we're 3, 4, 5 years into the relationship and perhaps married, and she'd bonded with your son, and it would just feel impossible to come out to her. And so you would have to then what? You'd have to live in the closet. You'd have to hide from her. You'd have to make sure to always delete your browser history. You'd have to make sure never to look too long at a male waiter's ass in front of her. You would be living with and sharing your life with someone that you had to hide from. That creates stress. That releases cortisone into your bloodstream, the stress hormone into your bloodstream. You know, that's the kind of pressure I cracked under when I was a teenager and I was just hiding who I was from my mom and my dad and my siblings and my friends. And I couldn't do that. I couldn't live that way. And yet so many bisexual people wind up living that way and then rationalizing it kind of in the way that you rationalized it in your call, that who needs to know this? If you're bisexual but heteroromantic and you're heteroamorous and you're never going to date someone or partner with someone of the same sex, aren't you just sharing details about your sex life? Well, yeah, I guess on some level you are sharing a detail about your sex life. Maybe your parents don't need to know. Maybe your friends and your bros at the gym and the guys you go hunting with, maybe they don't need to know. At the very least, your life partner, your chief or exclusive or primary, if you have an open relationship, sex partner, don't you want to have the kind of life where she could know? And if you're going to be out to the women that you date, and I think that you should be for your own sake, and also because it's wrong to lie to people for your own sake as well, or primarily, it could get out there. She could confide in a friend, and that friend could mention it to somebody else, and it could get out there. Maybe your parents won't find out, but, you know, you risk then a gym bro finding out. It seems to me that if where you live, it's impossible for someone to be out, bi, hetero, amorous, or hetero romantic and accepted, you might want to think about moving. And I realize that's a big lift if you say you have custody of your son, but, you know, if your son's mom is involved in your son's life or has visitation, or your son has deep roots in their community, if you support from your family, obviously moving would be hard, if not impossible at this moment. But there are certainly other parts of the country where gym going, hunting, comfortable with guns, ex-Marine, bi guy would be in great demand. I'm sure there are some women out there who listen to your call, and we'll hear from them. We'll get calls from them. We'll get response calls from them, who listen to your call and listen to the sound and timbre of your voice and listen, you describe the kind of man you are and that you were bisexual, and they got wet listening to that. There may not be women where you live who are comfortable dating bi guys, but, you know, in Portland, San Francisco, in Seattle, I think in a lot of West Coast coastal cities, there are a lot of women who would be not just comfortable dating a hot ex-Marine gym-going bi guy who sometimes brings home elk steaks from hunting trips, but super, super excited to date a guy like that. If those women don't exist where you are, you're going to have to do what queer people coming out have always had to do. You're going to have to create those people. My parents weren't supportive when I came out. I turned them into supportive parents. Women that you date might not be supportive or might not understand what it means for you to be bi in the way that you are bi when you first come out to them. But, and I do think it's fair to let them get to know you a little bit at first, let them assume that you're straight, which is not an irrational assumption, but then you should come out to them and disabuse them of that assumption, which is incorrect in your case, and allow them to weigh what you're telling them versus the person that they've gotten to know. And then you can tell them that you're capable of making and honoring a monogamous commitment. You're also capable, if they'd like to have an open relationship, of negotiating that kind of agreement. And if they're down and they want to be the woman at some MMF threesomes, that could be very exciting. Those could be adventures that you guys could go on as a couple. Maybe not right away, and that's not what you're looking for out of a relationship, but something that down the road that you would be able to explore with them and enjoy. But there are risks here. You know, what you describe is a community where it would be very risky for you to be out as a bi guy. Perhaps there would be consequences. Maybe your family would have problems with it. Maybe your parents would be very upset. Maybe you'd get invited on fewer hunting trips. Maybe you would feel less welcome or even less safe at the gym. But I assume as a familiar with guns, comfortable with guns, ex-Marine who goes to the gym, you can defend yourself. You can protect yourself. And you might be surprised if you start to come out, if more people get to know who you really are and get to know this detail about your sex life, which is, I think, more than just about your sex life. It's also about your identity. You may find other guys like you in your community who assume that you wouldn't be comfortable knowing who they were because they're sitting with the same fears and assumptions about how other people react that you're sitting with now. It is a sad fact. It is an indictment of our culture that so many of us, especially young people, learn about sex from watching porn. And although porn can be fun, if you really want to learn techniques that will arouse your partner or learn about your own body, your own pleasures, and how to communicate about those pleasures to your partner, porn is not the path. I recommend OMG Yes. OMGYes.com reframes the topics of sex and pleasure in a new way by presenting brand new research findings. OMG Yes scientists partner with Indiana University and Yale University researchers to ask tens of thousands of people what they discover is most pleasurable for them. And then they dig into the data, find the patterns and shared techniques, naming many for the first time, and they turn all of that wisdom into disarmingly straightforward and honest videos, animations, and data visualizations. We've gotten a lot of calls from people saying that they heard about OMG Yes on this show and that going to OMG Yes, watching the videos and the animation, looking at and taking in the data visualizations have really improved their sex lives. People really love OMGYes.com. I really love OMGYes.com, and you should check it out. See how much there is to explore at OMGYes.com. Savage Lovecast listeners get a special discount at OMGYes.com/savage. That's OMGYes.com/savage.
Hey, Dan, and the tech-savvy at-risk youth. I'm calling from Brooklyn, lesbian lady over here, and I just recently got sober, meaning no weed, tobacco, or alcohol, and it's day 13, and my sex drive is up, like legit, like my girlfriend and I are doing great, feeling really frisky and lovely, and even more than that, it's just like my attraction, my everything is just kind of on the high end. And is that a thing, or is this just my psyche, or is this just, you know, the absence of the substances actually just making me feel better? But what's the connection between sobriety and my sex drive?
I think you should take the win here. Often when I hear from people who've gotten sober, it's interfered with their ability to have sex. There are a lot of people out there who use drugs and alcohol to shut the voice off in their head that tells them that they can't be sexual in the ways they would like to be sexual, that the booze and the drugs are disinhibitors that they come to rely on. And then when they eliminate drugs and alcohol from their lives because they need to, because they are destroying them, because some people can't use without abusing, suddenly, sex is harder to have. It's harder for them to give themselves permission to be who they are, to feel disinhibited, to feel in the moment sexually. So rather than interrogate this too much, I think you should just count yourself lucky. So it's only been 13 days, and you don't say why you're sober. Maybe you're just giving it up for a little while, a little bit of a booze and cigs detox. I would support that. Or maybe you've decided that alcohol creates a lot of chaos in your life and isn't good for you. And of course, cigarettes aren't good for you. And you've decided to eliminate them entirely and forever. Isn't it wonderful to know that, unlike some people, when they eliminate alcohol or drugs from their lives, find it harder to have sex, that it's been easier for you? You've been hornier, more in touch with your desires now that they're not drowning under however much alcohol you were drinking before. So this is one of those instances where I think, why ask why? Just roll with it and just be glad you're not one of those people, one of the many people, who after eliminating drugs and alcohol have to work harder on tapping into their desires, work harder on allowing themselves not just to be and get horny, but then to do and experience the things sexually that they want to experience without relying on the disinhibiting crutch that for many drugs and alcohol represent.
Hi, Dan. Gay man from the Northeast, single, and really hoping to find a relationship, but not against occasional NSA. So I go on the apps, I go on the dating sites, I have a good network of friends, go out socially, not against getting set up, all of that's fine. So met a guy on an app that was more dating-oriented. We had a couple of phone conversations that were really good, that were not really sexual. And then it got a little sexual, which was totally fine. And, you know, we talked about interests that all seemed to be jiving. He was more bottom and submissive. I was more top and dominant. There were a few kinks that I wasn't into, but I had had some experience with and was totally fine with and willing to explore around ropes and feet. And all of that was fine. And then it started to get a little more intense. This was only about the third phone call. And he started talking about sort of tying him up and then grabbing his wallet and taking a bunch of cash out. I mean, he was saying several hundred dollars and taking it and telling him, well, I need this money, your bad day. And then absolutely never returning the money. That was part of his kink. So my problem wasn't with the kink, but it was kind of this level for someone I didn't know yet. I have some experience with different kinds of kink with people I've dated. And generally, like, there's been a little conversation, and then, you know, once we've gone out once or there's some, then the kink, then we can get a little deeper and so on. But I just really question someone that would do that. And especially this particular kink sounds like, I don't know, I feel like it's, I told him I didn't want, I have any interest in sex work for myself, that I didn't want this to be sex work. And I was a little worried about, like, could he later say I robbed him? I mean, mind you, I've kept the text exchanges, so I'd probably be okay. But I also question now whether I want to meet him just because of his judgment, not because of his kink, because it just felt like knowing I wanted a relationship to go really deep into this particular kink before we had met just made me a little uncomfortable.
Look, if the guy made you feel uncomfortable, if he engaged in something or displayed something that you consider bad judgment, you don't want to meet up with him now, trust your gut. Don't meet up with him. I didn't have these phone calls with this guy, so I'm just going to defer to you, your good judgment, and your gut and say, yeah, if you don't want to meet up with him, because on the third phone call, the kink conversation you'd already been having went in a direction or went to a place that was strange or unfamiliar for you, don't meet up with him. That said, seems a little odd to me, I guess. It seems weird to me that the conversation about ropes was fine, the conversation about feet, fine. The conversation about him being more submissive sexually and you being more dominant sexually, all that was fine. But then when he shared with you this fantasy, and didn't share a fantasy with you out of the blue, he didn't blindside you with this. You were already having a conversation about your kinks. He just got very specific about a scenario, a fantasy scenario of his that involves being tied up and robbed, which I can wrap my head around. There's a lot of people exploring fin-dom, fin-sub out there. This is, a kind of fin-dom, fin-sub moment. Basically, it's role play with a little money, backing it up and making it feel real in the same way spanking, the pain of a spanking, can back up and make feel very real role play around dominance and submission. So if I were you, I would at least have another phone call with this guy. I would tell him how you felt. Like, this felt oddly specific and you felt a little concerned. You know, what if he turns out to be a little nuts and calls the cops after you leave with the several hundred dollars? You might want to ask him what several hundred dollars represents to him financially. If he makes a very good living and several hundred dollars isn't much, not going to leave a dent, not going to leave a mark like a spanking might, then maybe you could wrap your head around it. I think you might be having, even though you're kinky, you're into dom sub sex, you're open to ropes, open to feet, I think you might be having a kind of knee-jerk kink phobic reaction to this guy's kink because you've never heard of anything like this before, because no one's ever asked you to do anything like this before. You know, if you can think back to when you were much less sexually experienced than you are now, when dom sub play may have been unfamiliar to you or new to you, or you hadn't yet begun to express yourself sexually in that way. You hadn't found that groove. If somebody had suggested just bondage and feet to you, then would you have had the same reaction you're having now to this guy's very specific fantasy scenario? It's that reaction people sometimes have when someone tosses a kink out on the table that they're unfamiliar with, where their gut reaction, informed by sex phobia and kink phobia, is, oh God, no. And I think at that moment you want to, instead of, oh God, no, you want to kind of, oh God, oh, tell me more. It's just a phone conversation. You haven't met this person yet. You're not in the same room with this person. Maybe you'd get more comfortable with the idea. Maybe it would fall into that same DS groove for you that the bondage and feet conversation fell into, or not. Maybe it would continue to make you feel uncomfortable. Maybe he would continue to escalate with other scenarios that didn't appeal to you, that didn't work with your erotic imagination where dom sub sex is concerned. So yeah, I'm loath to tell you not to trust your gut. If he gave you a bad feeling, if you felt uncomfortable and you don't want to talk with him again, much less meet up with him, don't talk with him, don't meet up with him. But you might want to think about why that made you uncomfortable and whether your discomfort was about his actions or informed by a kind of kink phobia that sometimes even people who think of themselves as kinky and game sometimes have to confront. All right, before we get to this week's listener response calls, let's read listener tweets. Regular listeners may know that I sometimes recommend broken toasters as a wedding gift, if it's a wedding you don't want to go to or the wedding of two people you don't like very much. Well, Yen Yaps tweets, if any of your listeners want a broken toaster, my sister-in-law has one. It caught this cookie on fire. We can cut the cord and hit it with a hammer to make it more clearly broken. There's a picture with Yen Yaps tweets. That does not look like a cookie that belonged in a toaster, so kind of not surprised. The toaster caught fire, but if anyone out there is looking for a broken toaster to give as a gift, Yen Yaps has one. Look him up on Twitter, and that broken toaster could be yours. Sex coach Shannon tweets, the guy on the Savage Lovecast who's mad at flaky people on Field has me cackling. Welcome to dating apps, brah. Being non-mono doesn't spare you the full shitty experience. And finally, Exeter86 tweets, regarding the opener of episode 786 of the Savage Lovecast, that was my rant about eating meat or fucking animals and eating meat. Consent, Exeter writes, isn't the operative condition, as animals cannot consent to anything more complicated than being fed. Even that is debatable. The causing of undue stress should be our concern. While it is our evolutionary heritage to eat meat, we are not entitled to mistreat animals we harvest for food. We must mitigate distress even as we kill them humanely. I say that as a hunter and angler. This applies to zoophiles as well. Cause no undue distress. I would like to live in a world where all animals that we kill humanely after allowing them to live lives that aren't characterized by distress, by pain, by anguish, but that is unfortunately not the world we live in. The hamburgers we're eating, the pork chops we're eating, the hot dogs we're eating, all made from animals whose lives were brief, miserable, and short. All right, if you want me to read your tweet on an upcoming episode of the Savage Lovecast, be sure to include the hashtag Savage Lovecast. And now listener response calls.
Hey Dan, response call to episode 786 about the woman who was no longer attracted to her larger size partner. I think that you two were really harsh on this person. She clearly felt very guilty and upset about the fact that she had lost attraction to her partner. And as you typically say, we can't control who we're attracted to. It's not something that we can change necessarily. And we don't know if they just may not have sexual chemistry anymore, and it may have nothing to do with the fact that the partner is larger sized. So I do agree that she should break up with her, but not beat herself up and just realize that attraction varies, and it may have just been that their relationship ran its course.
Hey, Dan, this is a response call to the caller in episode 786 who was looking for folks to hook up with on apps like Field and other sort of group and unicorn hunty apps. The caller, while you gave him amazing advice, the caller just seemed a little desperate. And as someone who has done quite a bit of unicorning, if somebody keeps on texting saying, are you sure we're going to meet up? I haven't heard from you. Are you sure? It gets a bit like a bit creepy feeling and sometimes is a real turnoff. Plus, as single people on some of these apps, we are inundated by offers. Just keep that in mind.
This is a response call for the teenage boy in episode 786 who was having trouble coming when he was having sex. I actually had this problem a lot when I was first becoming sexually active when I was in my late teens. And one thing that I found helped was if I knew that I was going to have sex with someone a little bit before, I would edge myself and get myself close to finishing and then give myself maybe like a 30 minute to an hour long cool down before I had sex. And I found that that helped and it made it so that I could come while I was having sex with someone. After a little while, I realized that this was making me come too quickly. So I just stopped doing it and then I could come in a normal time frame. So yeah, it's just something that you might want to try out. I have a feeling that because you're starting out, it might just be anxiety about it. I think that was the case for me. So yeah, give that a try and see if it helps and makes things better.
And we're going to leave it there. Got a question for next week's show or a comment about something I said on this week's show? The best way to get us your questions and your comments is to use the Voice Memo app on your phone to record your question or your comment, and then email it to us at voicemail@savagelovecast.com. You can also call us at 206-302-2064. The deadline to submit films for Hump 2022 is coming right up. Grab your camera, some friends / lovers, and make your short, dirty masterpiece. Go to humpfilmfest.com/submit right now for all the info you need on getting your film into Hump. There's no charge to enter Hump, as there is in some other film festivals, which I frankly find shocking. And the filmmakers whose movies make it into the festival get a cut of ticket sales. So have some fun, make some money, enter Hump. And the holidays are upon us. If you're looking for a gift that supply chain issues can't screw up, or a gift that isn't going to contribute to climate change, give the gift of the Magnum version of the Savage Lovecast by going to savage.love and clicking on gift. And my new book, Savage Love from A to Z, also makes a great gift for all your sex-positive loved ones. It has hilarious illustrations from Joe Newton and 26 all-new essays about your favorite Savage Love topics by me. Grab one today anywhere books are sold. Follow me on Twitter @FakeDanSavage. Follow Alaska on Twitter @Alaska5000. Follow Willem on Twitter @Willem. That's WILLAM. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech savvy at-risk youth and Nancy. We'll be back at you next week with another installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thank you for downloading.